Try working at it all.
Don't you get like your own spot?
Para.
Even Guilford Mall and Willowbrook Mall, they're all crazy trying to find a spot. I remember going to the dollar store, I was picking up a few little knickknacks, and no, it wasn't my kid's best gift, but you know, okay. And I'm waiting for a spot, waiting for a spot, waiting for a spot. Somebody's pulling out, I positioned my car waiting, somebody zips in front of me. I just sat there and I thought, no, you're a Christian, let your gentleness be evident to all. So I parked right behind them and glared at them for a while. I don't know if you've ever had to leave a sign on your, well, on somebody else's windscreen. You know, something happens in traffic and you have to leave a little sign or a notice on somebody's window shield. As I was doing some research into the talk today, I came across the 12 best notes left on somebody's window screen. It has absolutely nothing to do with what we're talking about today, but I laughed at some of them so hard. I have to share a couple with you. I can't share them all with you for obvious reasons. But this one, a little off color, but who taught you to park? Stevie Wonder? You know, so that was a little awkward. There was one sign that said, they left it on their own car, car can't move due to frozen doors. Actually, I've had that in the last couple of days. It's been so cold. Please don't give me a ticket. And then there were lots of tickets on the window screen. Poor guy. How about this one? Hi, my name is Jack. Not this Jack. I don't think that was you, Jack. But hi, my name is Jack, and I accidentally hit your car, and someone saw me. So I'm pretending to write down my particulars. Sorry, Jack. How about this one? I hit your car, I'm sorry. There's only a scratch on the back left panel, but because you looked rich, I'm not leaving my number. Sorry. Alright. Dear sir or madam, you may have noticed that your vehicle has found itself in two parking spaces. The truth is, it actually fits in one. For the benefit of all humanity, please lower your parking space consumption. Your friendly neighborhood Spider-Man. There were some funny ones on there, but anyhow, parking at Christmas is annoying. We come to beginning of 2016, and just before we look at what's ahead, let's look back for a moment. I'm sure you've had opportunity in your own quiet time to be able to do some of that. There are moments, obviously, in 2015 that stick out. A couple for me would be that both Shelley and I turned 50. Had great parties and celebrated, and we are now officially over the hill. I think 50 is 50 now the new hill? 60 is now? 60. Oh, that's good. So we still got a little ways to go. So there are moments in our lives that we look back on. There are moments in the news. Boy, 2015 was a year full of all kinds of different news making. We have a new government, obviously the refugee crisis and refugee issue globally. Economics are down. Canadian dollar lost a whole bundle. Housing market continues to go up. I discovered there was a Chinese Nobel Prize winner who was 85 years old, helping to discover a cure for malaria. Not quite there, but she still won the Nobel Prize. Of course, there were all kinds of other things. ISIS attack in Paris. U.S. Supreme Court legalizes gay marriage. Caitlyn Jenner. The Nepal earthquake. All these different things going on in the world, causing us to ask questions like, what went well in 2015 in our lives? What didn't go quite so well? What needs improvement? And what changes did we see? Or how did I grow in my life? We need to ask the same questions in our church. What went well in 2015? Where's God leading us as we go forward? What are some changes that we need to make? And as we've already heard people like Terry say, there's great joy in doing this in community. I look back at 2015 in the life of our church. I'm not sure there was a year that went by that I enjoyed preaching as much or that we heard from the Lord as much through series like Jonah. Remember the Jonah series last winter. And then we got into the book of Acts, into prayer over the summer, and then continuing from Acts chapter 13 all the way to Acts chapter 3248 as we go forward. And we need to remember those lessons, but also to look forward to 2016. So let me pray one more time, thanking God for 2015, and then we'll dive into what I think may be ahead for us in 2016. God, we do give thanks to you, for you are good. Even this morning with a friend in the back room, reminiscing about the fact that you are good all the time. Even when the news, globally, locally, personally, is not always the best, we still give thanks to you because you're good. That's who you are. Your love endures forever. And so we bless you and we say thank you, Lord, for what you've given us in the past 12 months. And we begin to turn our attention towards what you are doing in us now and in what you might want to do us within us in 2016. So we come to you and we say, Lord, speak. Work through us. Empower us for the sake of mission in these neighborhoods that you've called us to in the year ahead. In Jesus' name and for his sake. Amen. I want to begin to turn our attention to looking ahead. You know, as I begin to think through the year ahead in 2016, I want to ask three questions this morning. You each were given a sheet that has a number of pictures, a spectrum on it. Maybe helpful, because I'm actually going to need you to do a little bit of work this morning as we go. But I want to ask three questions, and here's where the first is. The first question, if you didn't get a sheet, maybe just stick up your hand. Dan's got some extras at the back. Maybe helpful. I'm going to have them up here on the flip chart. They may also come up on the screen, so somehow we'll be able to all see them. But the first question I want to talk about is, what kind of church are we? Now, I guess we could talk about church in all kinds of different ways, but let me simplify it this morning and talk about two kinds of churches. See, I think there's a spectrum. There's a spectrum between an attractional church on one hand and a missional church on the other. Attractional on one side and a missional one on the other. You can see that on your sheet or on the flip chart here as we begin to talk about it. What's an attractional church? Well, one of the ways that we begin to talk about what kind of church we are is to ask three questions again. Church is, church does, church organizes around what the church does. Say that again. The church is, the church does, the church organizes around what the church does. So when we begin to look at the, I guess, the left-hand side on your sheet, the attractional church, we describe the attractional church in the following way. The church is a collection of individuals who attend a worship service in the same place, same time. In other words, it's that place we go to on Sunday morning in order to do our religious duties. The church is. It's that building on the corner. It's that place we go to attend our religious services. When you look at the attractional church, you ask the question, what does the church do? It puts on programs to help people on their spiritual journey. So it's that place we go to on the corner that has the right program so that we can take steps forward spiritually. The church is, the church does, the church organizes itself around what it does, or Sunday morning gatherings is the very centerpiece of what an attractional church is all about. They're organized around Sunday morning. In that building, putting on religious services for people to go on a spiritual journey. So that's an attractional church. Does that make sense? On the other end of the spectrum, we begin to talk about what is a missional church. The church is, the church does, the church is organized around what the church does. So from a missional perspective, or other end of the spectrum, the church is a group of God's kids and ambassadors who participate with their Heavenly Father on His mission. The church does, makes disciples, of Christ, who become his hands and feet as they join God in what he's doing. Well, how does that kind of church organize itself? Around mission groups, made up of missionaries who are his kids, who work together in the neighborhood to where they're sent. See, one is a church that believes that somehow, if we build it, they will come. The other is a group of people who say, because of who God is, this is how we will live. A spectrum of two kinds of churches. Now, what I want to invite you to do just for a quick second is to stop. And I want you to take a line. When you see the line on your page, put a line where you think Southside fits between those two different kinds of churches, an attractional church and a missional church. Right? So just put a line in that spectrum somewhere. And then, secondly, put an X where you'd like us to be. Now, I know that's a dangerous question, that one. But put an X where you'd like us to be, and then take no more than 2 minutes and turn to one or two people around you, show them where you've put the line, this is where you think we are, and tell them where you've put the X. But this is where I'd like to be. All right? Does that make sense? Somebody give me a thumbs up that came out in English. Perfect. Lots of thumbs up. All right? Go for it. You got 2 or 3 minutes. Thank you. 30 more seconds. Have a peek around if somebody's on their own. See if you can find a way to include them. I'm going to get you to do another exercise in a couple minutes. See, if somebody's on their own, it might mean they have the right answer. They think they have the right answer, and they need your help to fix it. All right, let's come back together. I'm curious to know where we should put the line of where you think we are. So I'm going to see if we can do this. If I am about here, anybody want me to move left or right? Dan's pointing right. Stop, too far, go back, left. Anybody else? Paul, how are we doing? About here, is that all right? All right, that's where we are. Now, where's the X go? Dan, where's the X go for you? Oh, X is over here somewhere for Dan. Anybody else? Anybody put their X way over here? Well, I think we've cured us all of that one. But you know, there are some good things about attractional churches too. There are still some people in our culture that are longing to go and find a place of anonymity for a little while to be able to worship. So I don't want to paint it all in a bad light. I'm giving you two pictures, though. A church that's attractional, where church equals that place we go to on a Sunday for religious goods and services. But a missional church is one who recognizes that we're called to something very different. And I'm glad to hear that we're beginning to understand a little bit where that is. It looks like we have some room to grow, though. Here's the second question that I want to get us talking about this morning. When it comes to the place of church in our culture, what's the relationship? Let me tell you a little bit about what I mean. Again, there's two places to occupy. One is the center. One is, well, somewhere else. So let me take you back to the year I was born, 1965. It was a little depressing when I began to look at the internet last night and find out some other things that had happened in 1965. For instance, top movies 1965. Anybody have an idea? Grayson, you can't even go back that far in your mind. You can't even think all the way back there. But top movies 1965. Joanne? Dan? Movie.
You guys had movies in 1965?
Yeah, we had movies in 65. Rick, you're amazing. Sound of Music, top movie. Dr. Zhivago, Sound of Music, Dr. Zhivago. Top songs. This is where Flora got that one right. It was the Beatles, the song Help. Or Beach Boys, Help Me Rhonda. All the way back there. Or Rolling Stones had one or two. We don't need to go into those. TV shows, 1965. Not Leave It to Beaver and not Brady Bunch. Those were actually in the 70s. Even earlier than that. I Dream of Jeannie. Get Smart. I Spy. Hogan's Heroes. Anybody remember Hogan's Heroes? A few of us showing our age for sure. Famous Births. Sarah Jessica Parker. Charlie Sheen. Brooke Shields. Robert Downey Jr. I don't know why these guys are famous, but they were the ones that were also born. People who died in 1965. A little more class, I think, in this list. Winston Churchill. T.S. Eliot. The Church in Canada, 1965. Smack dab in the middle of our culture. In fact, there's probably no period of time other than 1965 where the church in Canada saw a higher percentage of people, saw more impact on the culture than in 1965. One writer said something to the effect of, you know, it's the Beaver, maple syrup, and church that describe who Canada is or what Canada is all about. I don't know how many of you remember a famous author, a Canadian, Pierre Burton, well known. Pierre wrote a book back in 1965 called The Comfortable Pew. In this book, Burton criticizes the Canadian church, saying, "Our culture is beginning to change. If the church does not change with the culture, the church will find itself irrelevant very quickly." Boy, he couldn't have been more wrong if he tried. And unfortunately, one of the things that's happened is we actually listened. Now, whether we were listening to Burton or not, we listened to that lie that said what happens is because the culture's changing, we have to race to keep up with it. Oh, we've done it in so many ways. We're guilty of it here at Southside in so many ways, too. Simple little things like the way we dress, the songs we sing. I remember when we even started our congregation out in Willoughby, on our big sign, we talked about the reality that if you don't like the music that you've heard in most churches, come to our church, because our music sounds like that which you'll hear on the radio. What were we thinking? What was I thinking? All of this was part of the church beginning to listen to this idea that somehow we would become irrelevant if we didn't follow the changes in culture. 1965 was the peak year for church life in Canada. And as of 1966, 50 years ago, the church in our country began to decline. Churches started to change. They started to take on what Burton was saying. Many of them, people in the churches that were progressive people, found the change in the church too slow, so they ended up leaving. Others found that they were quite conservative, and so what they did is they left the radical churches, the radical change churches, and went to more conservative ones. And some were caught right in the middle. They were moderate. They weren't for change, weren't against change, but somehow they just began to find the whole thing a waste of time. So they stayed home and slept in. Well, 50 years later, where are we? If in 1965 we were smack dab in the middle, where are we today? I want you, with your two or three that you're around again, take the other circle, the one that's empty, the one that says 2015 or 2016, whatever number I wrote down there, and I want you to say at the end of 2015 and beginning of 2016, where would you put the X now? Where is the church in relationship to our culture? Put the X in the spot. Take 30 seconds to do that together. Have a quick conversation, and we're back again to do the last part. All right, let me grab your attention again. I know we could talk for a long time on that conversation. In fact, I do often. This is some of the Forge stuff that you're getting this morning, some of the things that we talk about. But where would you put, Camille, where would you put the X for today?
On the meniscus of the...
Out here.
Closer
in? Okay. Anybody else? Should we move wider or narrower? Where should we move?
Outside.
You got a lot of votes for outside, Camille. Anybody else more inside? Tanner wants to move us more inside. Well, this is a big conversation, a really big conversation. I'm going to vote. My vote would be not only that we're on the margins of our story of what it means to be a Christian or what it means to live in a Canadian context, but there are more circles today. In fact, I think there's so many different stories that we live in a fragmented time where the story that was understood of Canadian culture in 1965, people don't even know that story anymore. Let me give you an example. Beth had a 40th birthday party in September, and there were, I didn't look up 1975, but you had a chart there at 1975 and all the things that were there. But the next day, Shelley had her 50th, and like at Beth's party, there were at Shelley's 50th a number of Southsiders and neighbors and friends, and one of my friends who is not a follower of Jesus had asked me a question a couple of days later. And the question came out of, Shelley's quite reserved. And so she said, please do not have a party for me. Well, I couldn't listen to that one. I had to have a party. But she said, whatever you do, don't do that North American thing where you say all these nice things about people. And I'm thinking, okay, I got to be careful how I do this. Because there's lots of nice things to say about Shelley. So what I did is instead, I invited a number of you to pray about why we're thankful to God for Shelley. Well, that seemed to go over all right. And at the end of that, I turned to Dan and I said, Dan, would you help? Would you lead us in a round of Amazing Grace followed by Happy Birthday? So we sang. And remember, there's these three different categories of people there. So my friend, who's not a Christian, several days later texts me and says, hey, great party. Thanks for having us come. What was the name of that song we sang at the end? So I said, well, happy birthday. Haven't you sung it before? He said, no, not that one. The other one. Friends, in our Canadian culture, can you believe that someone has not known or heard Amazing Grace enough to recognize the song? Hit me like a ton of bricks. We're no longer here. We're somewhere out towards the margins, and there's all kinds of different stories that are going on here. The church and culture are no longer sort of, you know, everything sort of blends together. We're now in the midst of this situation where the church is no longer in a position of privilege or power. We're no longer at the center like we were in 1965. So, third and final question. How should we respond? Oh, it was easy back in 1965. Guess what we did? We put on programs and we opened up buildings and we had great worship services because everybody knew the story and they would come. If you build it, they'll come. Attractional church stuff. But if we live out here, there are two ways or two responses that we can choose between as we are a church. One response is to say, how do we get back here? And we do everything possible to get back to a position of privilege. The other, which I think is consistent with what it means to become a missional church, is to learn to live at the margins. Or to do life well at the margins. Or perhaps saying it in a different way. How do we become a faithful presence? I want to suggest a couple things to us as we wrap this up and head towards the next 6 months in preaching series. The first thing I think we need to begin to do is to recognize that we are imitators of Jesus. What does it mean to be a church? It means that we become God's family, imitators of Jesus through the power of the Spirit. We were talking about the title for the next sermon series at staff a few weeks ago, and Craig came up with a verse. He said, I've been reading in the Gospels and reading the story of Jesus before Pilate. Listen to John chapter 18, verse 37. Actually, it's a few more verses than that. But the situation is Jesus in front of Pilate. And Pilate's having this conversation with Jesus around, who are you? They say that you're the king of the Jews. And it goes like this. You're a king then? Said Pilate. Jesus answered, you say that I'm a king. In fact, the reason I was born and came into the world is to testify to the truth. Everyone on the side of truth listens to me. To testify to the truth. See, I think the way that we be the church in the midst of these neighborhoods is not try to find a way back to the middle to a position of privilege or power or prestige, but rather instead to be like Jesus and at the margins. Learn to say, we will be a people who will testify to the truth. Now, the truth that Jesus was talking about was not a philosophy. Well, not first a philosophy anyways. What was it? It's what the reality of who his Father was. I have been born that I may testify to the truth. In other words, I may live in such a way that you will see only the Father. And all that he stands for. So if we're to be imitators of Jesus, what are we trying to do? To live out here at the margins of our culture in such a way that we will testify to the truth of who God is. What's a Christian? Someone who bears witness to the reality of who God is. It's not someone that shows up at church on Sunday. A building, a place to get their religious goods and services met. A group of people who are determined, they will live in such a way to bear witness to who God is. And they can't do that on their own. They're empowered by the Spirit of God. As if Jesus were making his life known or present by living through us. How does a Christian live? Testifying to the truth. How does that happen? By the Spirit of God coming in and dwelling us, as if Jesus were living his life through us. Paul says it to Timothy this way as he's doing a discipleship lesson in the epistle to Timothy, second epistle to Timothy. He says, "For the Spirit God gave us does not make us timid. It gives us power, love, and self-discipline." And if you do a word study on self-discipline, it has nothing to do with, I'm going to be determined to lose weight this year, or I'm going to be determined to give more, or pray more, or do more. It has everything to do with surrender. That I will surrender my life to the power of God at work in me, and He will change me. We imitate Jesus empowered by the Spirit. Why? For the sake of the world. What does that look like? One of my friends who's a professor at Cary Theological College said it this way: "I am convinced that the greatest threat to the faithful witness bearing of the church is the absence of vibrant and vital practices of the gospel. When the life of the church is alive with practices faithful to the gospel, the witness of the church simply has to point to these practices." What's he saying? He's saying that if we're to live like Jesus, to testify to the truth and live on the margins, empowered by the Spirit, the way that we go about that is that we begin to engage in practices so that instead of us trying to recapture the middle, people will begin to see the way we live on the margins and say, "How do I live like you?" Some of you know the story of my friend John Stackhouse, who used to teach at Regent. It's about 10 years ago that John came and spoke to 135 pastors that Forge had begun to group together. John came and spoke about this idea of gay marriage in Canada and the reality that at one point we thought those that had marriage licenses or were licensed to perform marriages may at some stage have to perform gay marriages. And we were talking about, what do we do with this? And John got up in front of all these pastors and he made this comment. He said, this whole idea of the gay marriage thing, he says, why are you all worried about this? You've lost this battle already, so stop. Everybody was so totally annoyed with him. He said, that ship has already sailed in Canada. It sailed 10 years ago. And remember, that was 10 years ago, so it's 20 years ago that that ship sailed. He said, the issue that you need to pay attention to is actually polygamy. For it's the next big issue that the church is going to have to face in our country, and we can already begin to see signs of this. Well, John moved out to New Brunswick in the summer, and just before he left, I had lunch with him. And he said to me, Cam, remember that conversation we were having about, you know, how do we live at the margins in terms of this whole same-sex marriage thing? He says, let me tell you what's happening in the Scandinavian countries already. They were 10 years, 20 years almost ahead of us in terms of gay marriage and same-sex attraction stuff. He said, they're already discovering in the Scandinavian countries that it's imploding. Some of the things they thought would help them get ahead, it's like a sinkhole, and it's falling apart, and they're struggling deeply with what's been created as a result. They're now starting to turn and look to others who maybe have been living a different way. What was John saying? That to testify to the truth, instead of saying, you have to do it our way, you begin to live in such a way that when all those around you seem to be failing in how they've determined to live, they look and say, there's something going on here. Why didn't we pay more attention to this? That's what Jesus was talking about when he's talking about testifying to the truth. How are we going to do that? Through the practices that we engage in as mission groups and mission group members. Through a sermon series. The series over the next 6 months will look like this. The first 6 weeks we're talking about money. In fact, if you look at our culture, you see three things that tend to sort of fight up or bump up against the church and some of our values and morals all the time. The first is money, the second is sex, the third is power. In fact, there's many, many conversations and books around money, sex, and power. But what we're going to do is we're going to begin to say, instead of telling the world, here's how you're supposed to spend your money, we're going to learn to be generous like our God is generous, so that all will see who He is. Instead of living with this sense of power where we climb up and get ahead of somebody else, we're going to learn to live with humility. We're going to go through the whole season of Lent, dealing with issues of humility in our lives. And I can promise you, for each and every person here, some of you are going to say, well, I'm not arrogant, this should be fairly easy. Oh, hold on, buckle up. There's some stuff that we all need to deal with so that we might learn to testify to the humility of Christ found in passages like Philippians chapter 2. And finally, the third one, after Easter, between Easter and the church retreat, we're going to deal with the issue of sex, or said from a different perspective, the issue of purity. Why did God say the things that He said about sex? Not to put boundaries around us, not to put us in a box, not for us to enjoy life, but rather the complete opposite. So that we might come to learn what love is really all about and demonstrate to a world around us who He is. Let me close with this verse out of Romans chapter 15. Craig's put it in the study guide over the next few weeks as a part of our morning and evening prayer. May the God of hope fill you with all joy and peace as you trust in Him, so that you may overflow with hope by the power of the Holy Spirit. I do not believe that God is asking us to change Canada. That's His job. I do believe that God is calling us to testify to the truth of who He is by living as a faithful presence in the midst of a culture that oftentimes has lost its way. But we need to love it enough to demonstrate what life to the fullest, according to Jesus, was all about. Let's bow for a word of prayer. We're going to come and take communion together, sing a couple of songs before we close this morning.